Okay, today's Daf Shabbat of Kuf Chaf Zayin. We are at the middle of Kuf Chaf Vav Amud Bet at the Mishnah in the beginning of the 18th Perek. We are dealing with a gzeira that the Chachamim made against overexertion on Shabbat. So when it comes to moving things around, we're concerned A, is this overexertion? Or B, is the thing allowed to be moved in the first place, or is it muktzah? That's what we're going to be dealing with. Mafnin, afilu arba v'chamesh kubot shel tevin v'shel tevua, v'pnei ha'orchim v'pnei bitul bet ha'midrash v'lo ha'tzar ha'tzar. If you need extra room to sit your guests or to sit students in a study hall, then you're allowed to remove four or five full boxes of grain, but you're not allowed to clear out the storehouse, right? So that would be overexertion. Mafnin truma tehora, you're allowed to clear out truma tehora because that's fit for use on Shabbat. Udmai, and even suffik, even produce that is a suffik as to whether or not it was tithed properly, you're allowed to remove. Umas v'sheni shenitla trumato, and the miser that had truma properly given before you took the miser, umas v'sheni v'hekdesh shenifdu, or Maaser Sheni, the second tithe, or Hekdesh, consecrated property. Generally, when it comes to Maaser Sheni, it's yours, but you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. And generally, people would not bring their produce, all their produce to Yerushalayim. They would sell the produce wherever they lived, then they would bring the money to Yerushalayim and buy produce there. So if you had yet to redeem that produce, that's Maaser Sheni or if you had already redeemed that produce, then that's Maaser Sheni, Shenifda. Similarly, consecrated properly, you promised to the Beit HaMikdash, but then you wanted the property back, so you paid opposite to redeem that property, right? Those things are allowed to be used. Vaturmos yavesh, dried turmos, you're allowed to. Why? Because even though you wouldn't eat it, a goat would eat it. Avaloa to tevel, but you cannot. You can't remove untithed food, right? Even in the same amount, because you just don't have use for that, because you can't tithe food on Shabbat, and therefore it's going to be muktzah. V'lo t'maser rishon shelo nitla trumato. Similarly, you're not allowed to take out maser rishon if you haven't given the truma beforehand. First you give the truma, then you give the maser. V'lo t'maser sheni v'hekdesh shelo nifdu. Alternatively, maser sheni you have to bring to Yerushalayim or consecrated property that you did not yet redeem. That's muktzah. You have no use for it. V'lo t'aluf, you can't remove luf, right? V'lo t'chardal, not mustard. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel matir baluf. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you're allowed to remove luf. Mipneshu machala orvin. Right? It's you can feed ravens with it, and so it has a use on Shabbat. The chavile kash, chavile etim, chavile zradim. When it comes to bundles of twigs, stubble, or reeds, imet kinel machal behem taltelantam v'im lavim taltelantam. If you designated them to feed animals from before Shabbat, you're allowed to move them. If you did not designate them to feed animals from before Shabbat, then you're not allowed to move them. Okay. Gemara hashta chamesh mafnin arba mibaya. Right. So the Gemara asks question like this: if I know you're allowed to move five, isn't it obvious that you're allowed to move four? Why do you have to teach me four or five? Amar Chizda arba mi chamesh. So Chizda says, yeah, it means four from five. Meaning, if you have five, you're allowed to remove four of them, right? 80%. Alternatively, ikda amri arba meotzar kata and chamesh meotzar gadol. Alternatively, you could say two different sized storehouses. If it's small storehouse, you can remove four because that's a relatively insignificant amount. A big storehouse, you're allowed to move five because that's a relatively insignificant amount. Umay valot otzar. Now that you've already told me that there's a limit to how much I can take out, four from five, right? Then I know that I can't take out all of them, right? So why do you have to tell me that I can't remove the storehouse, right? I already know you can't remove the whole thing. So what is loat ha'otzar telling me that I don't already know? Shelo yatchil be'otzar tchila, right? You should not begin a new storehouse. Why? Because if you haven't yet begun removing things, then in your head, that storehouse was never intended to be used on Shabbat. So it's all muktzah. If you had already started removing food from there, then at least in theory, in your mind, you may have thought to use this this food, so it's not muktzah. But if you really had, if you didn't start removing things, it's not clear that you had any intention to use that on Shabbat, and it would all be muktzah. Umani, Rabbi Yehuda, the Idle muktzah. And who does this accord with? It must be Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, because he has a very broad definition of what muktzah is. Basically, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon have a machloket as to regarding muktzah. They both buy into the concept, but according to Rabbi Shimon, something has to be, if something to be muktzah, it has to be designated for something you're not allowed to do, right? So it has to have a function that you're not likely to use on Shabbat in order for it to be muktzah. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's the opposite. Anything is basically presumed muktzah unless it has a critical purpose on Shabbat, right? So they all agree if something is designated, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda agree that if something is designated for for an usher purpose, you can't move it. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda agree that if something's primary function is something that is necessary, absolutely necessary for Shabbat, then you're allowed to use it. Where they have the machloket is something random. It is not designated for something usher, nor is it designated for something like meal, like vessels for a meal. It's not designated for a main use on Shabbat. Anything else that is neither here nor there, that's where the machloket exists. According to Rabbi Yehuda, something without a clear function for Shabbat is going to be muktzah. According to Rabbi Shimon, that is not going to be muktzah. So because these things, this must follow Rabbi Yehuda's shita, because he says that if this storehouse, right, you shouldn't begin with this storehouse. Why? He didn't have explicit intent to use that storehouse on Shabbat. If you didn't have explicit intent to use that storehouse on Shabbat, then the default is that is muktzah. That's clearly Rabbi Yehuda's shita, because Rabbi Shimon would say, well, if as long as its use is not usser, then I don't have to worry about using it on Shabbat. So that's clearly Rabbi Yehuda's shita, if you understand it in that following way, right? Ushmuel amar arba v'chamesh. So Shmuel understands this a little bit differently, right? He says, what does it say? 4 and 5. Kedamri inchi. That's just how people talk, right? It was medaber belashon b'nei Adam. That's a normal way of saying things. 4 or 5 to indicate, you know, a small amount. Right? And the truth is, if you want, you can even remove a little bit more, but as long as you don't remove the whole thing. Right? As long as you don't remove the whole thing, you're not allowed to remove the entire thing. That is when the problem kicks in. And then what is the problem with removing the entirety of the storehouse? Because you may, if you remove the entire storehouse, you're going to realize that the ground is unlevel, and that's going to bother you. You might come to level up the ground. But you are allowed to start from a new storehouse, meaning once you understand that the Mishnah, when it says that you're not allowed to remove the storehouse, is referring to removing the entirety of the storehouse, right? Now, seemingly, you'd be allowed to start a new storehouse, right? Because we only understood that you're not allowed to start a new storehouse in accordance with the first interpretation that needed to say that so that it would have some sort of so that it would be teaching me something new. But now that means something else. Now I can say that you're allowed to start a new storehouse. Umani Rabbi Shimon need to lay mukta, and that according to the Shita of Rabbi Shimon, who does not hold by this wide definition of mukta, but he has a more limited definition of mukta, and he says, who cares if you didn't designate it for use? It's food. You're allowed to remove. Right. So we taught in the Braita that you're not allowed to start a new a storehouse. However, you're allowed to make a path. You're allowed to make a path in the storehouse in order so that you can, you know, get in and get out. Osebo shvil v'hamarta ein matchilin. Right. So what exactly does it mean? You're allowed to create a path. But you just said that you're not allowed to start in that storehouse. Why? You're not allowed to start off a new storehouse, but you're allowed to create a path in the storehouse that didn't exist beforehand? Isn't that starting the new storehouse? No, what we mean to say is like this, right? The concern is that all this stuff is mukta, right? So what are we saying? That you're allowed to create a path. If you're allowed to go in, you're allowed to create a path, but only with your feet, so that you're not moving around the mukta things. You're allowed to create a path, but only with your feet, so that you're not moving the mukta things with your hands. That's what the Mishnah was trying to teach you. Tanu Banan, Tevua Tzevura, Bizman Sheitchil Ba Me'erev Shabbat, Mutar Listapek Mimena B'Shabbat, Vim Lav, Asur Listapek Mimena B'Shabbat. Another relevant braita that we taught, grain piled up in piles, if you already started using that pile from before Shabbat, then you're allowed to continue. However, if you haven't started using up that grain on Shabbat, then from before Shabbat, then you're not allowed to continue taking from that grain on Shabbat. Divrei Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Acha Matir. That is the shita of Rabbi Shimon. But Rabbi Acha says that in either event, whether you started using it before Shabbat or not, you're allowed to continue using from it from Shabbat on Shabbat. Klavei Laya. Well, that seems like the opposite of what we would have assumed, because Rabbi Shimon is generally limiting with his definition of muktzah. Ella Ema Ndivri Rabbi Acha Rabbi Shimon Matir. So really, maybe it should have said like this, right? These are the words of Rabbi Acha, who says only if you started from before Shabbat, but not if you didn't start before Shabbat. And Rabbi Shimon says that whether you started using it before Shabbat or not, it's going to be Mutter. Ntana Kamashiur Tevua Tzevura Letech. And we asked on that Braita, well, what is the minimum size of piled up grain that is a letech, to a half core? By Mine Rav Nachumi Bar Zacharia Me'abaye Shiur Tevua Tzevura Bechama Amalei Hare Amru Shiur. Similarly, Rabbi Nechumi Bar Zecharia asked of Abaye, what is the shiur of Tzvua Tzvura, of piled up grain? He says, the Chachamim already said that it's a Letech Ibailu, Hani Arba Chamesh Kubo de Gamar. You ask the following question. These four or five boxes that were spoken of in the Mishnah, Ba'arba v'chamesh kupot in tvelo, right? Alma lemaute behilucha adif. Right, Odilma lemute masoy adif. Okay, so here's what he's asking. Right, when I say you can only take out four or five boxes, right, is that to tell me that davka you take out four or five boxes and you must do it in four or five trips? Right, meaning we do not want you walking in and out more than four or five times. And our concern is how many times you're walking in and out and not actually how much you're carrying. Right? You follow, like that's what we're asking. What do I care more about? How many times you're going in and out or how much you're carrying? Now, from the fact that you can carry four or five full boxes, right? The heaviest boxes that there are, I seemingly do not care how heavy the boxes they are and how much you're carrying and how much is piled up in there. I just don't want you going in and out more than four or five times, because what is the overexertion on Shabbat speaking about? It's not how much you carry. It's how many times you go back and forth. That's the overexertion. That's what I'm concerned about. Or is that not a proper raya? And what I am actually concerned with is how much you're carrying, but I don't care how many times you go in and out. You can go in and out 10, 15 times if that's what it takes you to remove four or five full boxes. Just don't carry more than four or five full boxes, because that's too much carrying. That's the question. What is overexertion? Is it how many times you go in and out, or is it how much you're carrying? Ndashima, Nitani Chada, Mafnin, Afilo Arba Vechamesh Kupo Shel Kadei Shemen Vishel Kadei Yayin. Right. So we taught in two different braitas that you're allowed to clear out four or five jugs of oil and wine, and the other one says you can even remove 10 or 15. And how do we reconcile between these two contradictory braitas, four or five or 10 or 15? So how exactly do we reconcile between those two? My love, b'hakami fligi, isn't it to say that the braita is arguing over the following point? The marasavar ma'ute bihilucha adif, marasavar ma'ute bimasoy adif. Right. The one says you should go. So one says better to diminish in the amount of times that you walk in and out and only go in and out four or five times. And the other one says that's better to diminish the amount that you're carrying, and you should go in 10 or 15 times if that means that each time you're going to be carrying less. Meaning they don't permit you to carry out more than four or five, but one would rather you carry out four or five in four or five trips, and the other one would rather you carry out four or five in 10 or 15 trips so that each time you're carrying a lighter load, right? That would seemingly be a good proof to a good raya for this machloket that we argue upon this exact point, right? Because if you're going out 10 times, then you're carrying half a load in each. If you're going out 15 times, then you're carrying a third of a load in each. So if you tell me to only go in and out 5 times, then you don't care how much I'm carrying as long as I'm walking a fewer amount of times. If you tell me 10 or 15 times, then you don't care how much I'm walking as long as I'm carrying less than the maximum weight. No, that's not a good raya. Really, you could suggest that everyone says better to walk in and out a fewer amount of times. Umi savard be'eser b'chamesh esrei akupot kai, right? And what I meant when I said, or what the Braita meant when it said 10 or 15, is not talking about trips, it's talking about boxes, right? How so? Or sorry, a kupot kai, or did you think that was talking about 10 or 15 boxes? Right? It wasn't talking about 10 or 15 boxes. A kadin kai, rather, is talking about 10 or 15 jars of oil and wine that are in those boxes. Velokasha, and there's no steer between the braitas. Had mishtakli chad chad bekupa. Had mishtakli tre bekupa. Ve'ad mishtakli tlata tlata bekupa. Right? So, when the 10 or 15 is not talking about trips, it's not talking about how many trips you're taking to remove the five boxes. 10 or 15 is talking about how many jugs of oil or bottles of wine you have. That's 10 or 15. Now, when your jugs of oil are very big and they only fit in one per basket, that's when you take five trips and carry five boxes, right? But if they're smaller, right, so that you can fit two jugs of oil in each box, then you carry 10 jugs of oil, still in 5 boxes, still in 5 trips. Or if you have very small jugs of oil, like the jugs in Harpania, which can fit 3 jugs per box, then you still take 5 boxes, which is 5 trips, but 15 jugs of oil. And that is the discrepancy between the 10 and 15 as opposed to the 5. That's not to say that they're having a machloket as to whether you carry lighter loads in more trips or take fewer trips with heavier loads. Ibailuhu, Hani Arba V'Chamesh Deka'amar, he's asked the following question. These 4 or 5, which were mentioned, Afagav the Itle Orchin Tuva, Odilma Hakolafia Orchin. Is that to say that no matter how many guests you have, you should bring 4 or 5 boxes? Or no, it's like the average amount of guests to take out 4 or 5, but honestly, if you have more guests, then take out more. Make room for them. There's no limit. Vim tipte lomara kolafia orchin, chad gavra mafni lekulo, odilma gavra gavra mafni lenafshe. And if you want to say that it all goes by how many guests you're having, okay, so is it each guest carries out for themselves, or does one person carry out for all the guests? Tashma da amar rabba. So there was once a time that Rebbe went to go give a shir, and he saw that the Beit Midrash hall was going to be too small, that it's going to be very cramped for the Talmidim, so he found a field, and the field was filled with bundles of grain. And so he cleaned out the entire field in order to fit all the students. Rebbe Yosef, Amar Rebbe Oshia, a similar story, Pam Achad Halach Rebbe Chia, right? Similarly, exact same story. There wasn't enough room in the Beit Midrash. He found a field. He removed all the bundles of grain from the field and sat all the students comfortably. So we can see from there, from the fact that he saw to clear out the entire field, more than 4 or 5 bundles, that it all matters in just how many people are going to sit there. But still, I have the question: does one person take out all of them, or does each person take out for themselves? Tashmav, Imer, Rebbe. Well, from the fact that it says, from the fact that the story goes that Rebbe cleared out the entire field, doesn't that sound like one person does it for everyone? Are you telling me that Rebbe cleared out the entire field for his students? Rebbe was the Nasi. He was the most important person of the time. You see him walking around the field, clearing out everyone's bundles of grain to make sitting room? That's beneath his kavod. He shouldn't be doing such a thing, right? So clearly, it's not saying that he literally did it. Rather, he instructed people to do it, and you can see from there that everyone removes it for themselves, right? So no one person is really removing more than one, right? Mipnei ha'orchin, right? So the Mishnah says you're allowed to remove it because of the guests, make room for the guests. Amar Yochanan, gedola hachnasat orchin gashkemad beit midrash, dekatani mipnei ha'orchin umrei bitul beit midrash, right? So we can see that inviting in guests is as great as getting up early to go to the beit midrash, as they were taught in conjunction with one another. You got to clear out your storehouses, either to create a Beit Midrash for a lecture, or for guests. So we see how important inviting in guests is. Rav Dimi ben Arda amar yoter mashkamat beit midrash tekatan mipnei orchin v'hadam mipnei beit midrash. And then Rav Dimi suggests that actually inviting in guests is more important than a public lecture, because it was taught before. It says to welcome in guests or to create room in the Beit Midrash. So the fact that we taught it even earlier, what we're suggesting is it's even greater than the Beit Midrash. Amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav gedolah hachnasat orchim mehagbalat penei shechina dichtiva yomer Hashem yomatzav tichin beinecha al nata avor. Really, we see even a greater statement that inviting in guests is greater than accepting the divine presence, because by Avram Avinu, Avram's talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then Avram says, "Hold on one second, God, while I invite in these guests." Amar Bilazer Borei Shaloki midat Kadosh Baruch Hu midat basar v'dam in katan yachol umar legadol hem tenat shavo etzlecha. Right, so we see that the trade of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not the trade of people. When it comes to people, a small, less important person cannot tell a more important person, "Just wait one second. Just wait, wait one second. Wait for me for one second," right? The less important person isn't saying that to the more important person. Whereas when it comes to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, Avram is able to say, "Just wait one second, I'll come right back. I have to go invite in guests." Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Bar Shila, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shisha Dvarim, Adam Ochel Berdein Be'olam Hazeh, Vekim Kriyam Be'olam Haba. There are 6 things that we mentioned in the morning. There are 6 things that you enjoy, that you get reward for in this world, without detracting from your reward for it in the next world, right? There is a theory when it comes to schar olam haba, the reward that you get for the next world, that that you're creating a storehouse of reward, and whatever you're using up in this world, you're not getting in the next world. Not everyone prescribes to that shita, but that is a theory. And so there are six things that you could do that even though you get reward from them in this world, you're not using up your reward in the next world, right? You're getting reward in both, but you're not using one to diminish the other. Ve'eluhen, these are the six things. Hachnasat, orchim, vikur, cholim, ve'iyun, tefillah, right? Inviting in guests, visiting the sick, and having kavana when you daven. Vashkamad, beit ha-midrash, v'megadel, panav, v'talmud Torah, v'hadan, et chaveru, l'kaf zchut, right? So, getting up early to go to the beit midrash, and raising children who are going to be involved in Talmud Torah, and judging people favorably. Eini, is that really so, that these are the six things? But we taught a similar thing, that these are the things that a person can do and enjoy the rewards in this world and in the next world. And these are the things, right? Honoring your father and mother, and acts of kindness, and having peace, bringing about peace between people, the Talmud Torah keneged kulam, and proper learning Torah is equal to all of those things put together. Hani in midyachrini lo, and that implies that these are the things that you get reward in this world and the next world for. But anything else, you seemingly do not get reward both in this world and the next world. Hani nami bahani shaychi. No, they're all you all have a similar reward for it. All the things that we mentioned, because they're all interrelated, meaning they all they all basically deal with the same general topics of Talmud Torah and Chesed and Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. These are all things that are basically fall into the same categories. Tanu Rabbanan, Hadan Chaveiro L'Kaf Zchut. Now that we mentioned the significance of judging people favorably, we're going to go on a little bit tangent about judging people favorably. Dani Noto L'Zchut. So anyone who judges his friend L'Kaf Zchut, so other people, so he will be judged L'Kaf Zchut, right? So if you judge someone favorably, you'll be judged favorably. Maaseh umaseh be'adam echad, sheyared megalil ha'elyon v'niskar etzel balabayit echad bedarom, shalosh shanim, erev yom ha'kipurim amar lo tein litzchari ve'elech vazun et ishti uvanai. Right, so there was a certain man from Galil ha'elyon who came and he worked for another person for 3 years, and before Yom Kippur of that third year, he says, please give me my schar for the last 3 years, and I'm going to go support my wife and kids. I'm going to go back home. Amar lo ein li maot, amar lo tein li perot, Amarli Ainli Tainli Karka Ainli Tainli Behema Ainli Tainli Karim Vikastot Ainli if she looking of Lachora Balach Labeto Mechafe Nefesh. Right. So the man says, please give me my pay me. He says, well, I don't have any money. He says, give me fruit. He says, I don't have any produce. He says, give me land. He says, I don't have any land. Give me animals. I don't have any animals. Give me linens. I don't have any linens. So the man basically packs up his stuff and goes home very dejected. Right. Lachar Haregel Natal Balabait Sacharo Biyado. Right, so then after the regal, the man, the employer, gets the money together and packs up all of his stuff, and then goes to the Gilil HaElyon to pay the man who has been working for 3 years. So he packs up food and drink and delicacies with him. And after they ate and drank together, he gave them the man's payment. When you ask for your money, and I said, I don't have any money to give you, what did you suspect of me? Meaning, were you suspicious of me? That I was lying? That I was stealing from you? What did you think of me? No, I thought to myself that maybe the market was very low that day, and you could buy expensive things for cheap that you could turn around and then sell more expensive. And so you invested all your money in those things, which would go up in value, and then you could make money on them. So that's what I thought. I thought that you just actually didn't have any money on you because that opportunity just came your way. So basically, judged him favorably. And what about when I said that What about when I said that I don't have any animals? So you asked for animals, I said I don't have any animals. What did you suspect of me then? I said, maybe you're renting them out to someone else. When you asked for land and I said I don't have any land, what did you suspect of me? I said, yeah, well, maybe you loaned them out to someone else. Other people were using your land and paying you for it. When I said I didn't have any fruit, what did you suspect of me? Amarti shema in meusarot. I thought, yeah, you probably have fruit, but maybe they you didn't take meiser on them, so they're not fit to use. When I said I didn't have any linens, what did you suspect of me? I said, maybe you made all of your possessions hekdish, and so you couldn't give me anything. He says, you know, just like you said, just like you thought, that's actually what happened. He says, well, I consecrated all my possessions because I didn't want my son to inherit them because he wasn't learning Torah, so I didn't want him to benefit from my possessions. And then I went to nullify my neder. So I could have all my possessions back. And then I came to pay you. And since you judged me favorably and you didn't assume that I was lying or stealing from you, Kadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably. Right, so there was a certain righteous man who went and redeemed a woman who was kidnapped, a Bat Yisrael who was kidnapped. He went and redeemed her. He went and paid her schar, right? And then he brought her into his hotel room in the inn and lied her down by his bedside. And the next morning he went to the mikvah, right? So that looks very suspicious, right? Then he went to go teach Torah to his students the next day. So when I lied this woman next to my bed, what did you assume? What did you think of me? Right? Amarnu shema yishbanu talmid she'enu baduk l'rebi. So we said that perhaps there was one of us, one of the students, who you did not, fully trust to treat this girl properly. So you had to keep her by you so that you'd know that nothing bad would happen to her. Okay. And in the next morning, when I went to the mikvah, what did you assume of me? Right? Because if you're going to the mikvah, maybe you're going to the mikvah because you slept with someone the previous night. Amarnu shem bnei Torah chaderech ira keri l'rabbi. We thought that because of how strenuous the journey was, that in the middle of the night you had an involuntary seminal omission. Amar lehem ha'uvda kachaya. It says exactly what you thought happened. That is exactly what happened. Vatem k'shem shedanti l'kav zchut hamakom yedinu etchem l'kav zchut. And I know that you didn't have to judge me favorably. You didn't have to assume the best of me. But really, that was really what happened. And because you judged me favorably, Kadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably. Tan Rabbanan, pamachar utzrach, ndavar echa letalmi de chachamim etzel matronita achad. One time, there was a certain Talmud Chacham who was called to a certain noble woman in Rome. She called Gdolei Rome mitzuyin etzla, that all the important people of Rome go to her for immoral behaviors. Amru mielech, and they said, okay, she wants to see a Talmud Chacham. Who's going to go visit her? Amr lehem Rabbi Yeshua anielech. Then Rabbi Yeshua says, I'll go visit her. Halach Rabbi Yeshua v'talmidav. So Rabbi Yeshua went with his students. Kevan sheyigel petach beita chalat tefila verichuk arba amon. And when he got to the entrance to her door, he took off his tefillin. That's very suspicious. Why would he take off his tefillin before he entered in there? V'nichnas v'nal zel b'fnein. And then when he went in, he locked the door in front of them. V'achar sheyatzah yard v'tavav. And then when he left her house, he went to the mikvah, right? And then he went to teach his students in the Beit Midrash. So he asked his students, when I took off my tefillin there, what did you suspect of me when I was taking off my tefillin? Says, we just thought that Rebbe holds that you shouldn't bring tefillin into such a tame place, to a place where, bad tame things are done. Okay, but when I locked the door in front of you, what did you suspect of me then? We suspected that maybe there was a very private a very private government matter that needed to be attended to that no one else was allowed to hear. When I went into the mikvah the next day, what did you suspect of me? Says, well, we thought, you know, some spit came out of her mouth, which her spit would be tameh, and it landed on your clothes, making you tameh, and you had to go to the mikvah. Amar lehem ha'uvda kachayek. This is exactly what you suspected. That is exactly what happened. And he says, since you judge me favorably, when even my actions look suspicious, Kadosh Baruch Hu should judge you favorably. Mafnin Truma Tehora, so you're allowed to clear out Truma Tehora. Pshita, isn't it obvious you're allowed to clear out Truma Tehora? That's perfectly fit for use. Lo tzricha de mancha biyad Yisrael. Ma'ud teima kivan deluchazi le aser kamash melan kivan dechazi le kohen shaper dami. But it was not in a Kohen's possession; it was in Yisrael's possession. So you may have thought, since the Yisrael is not allowed to eat from the Truma, maybe for him it's muktzah kamash melan that he's allowed to move it because it's fit for a Kohen. Udemai, what about Suffolk? Tithe produce? Demai, halochazile. You're not allowed to eat demai. Why would it not be muktzah? Kivan de ibai mifkar lelichase v'hava ani v'chazile hashtanami chazile d'tnan machlin etanim demai v'tachzania demai. Right. So, well, in theory, you could eat the demai. Why? Meaning, it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility that you can eat it. Because even though this produce is Suffolk tithe, we let poor people or traveling soldiers eat from demai. We have special dispensation that you're allowed to eat, let them eat from demai. Now, any person on any given Shabbat can say all of my property is hefker and ownerless, and then become poor and then eat from the demai. So, because it was theoretically possible that he could have eaten from the demai on Shabbat, we don't consider it muktzah because it's only mukta if there was no theoretical way that you could use it on Shabbat. V'amar Rav Huna, Tana Beit Shammai, Omrim, Ein Machilin Ta'anim Demai, V'Tachsania Demai, V'Beit Hillel Omrim, Machilin Ta'anim demai v'achsanim demai, right? And that's the machlok of Hillel Beit Shammai, where Beit Shammai holds you're not allowed to eat, where the poor people and the traveling soldiers are not allowed to eat demai. Beit Hillel says the poor people and traveling soldiers are allowed to eat demai. Masa Rishon shenitla trumato, when it comes to Masa Rishon that has the truma removed from it, pshita, isn't it obvious? Right? That's proper. That's done properly. Right? That's just normal food. Lo tricha sheik dimo b'shibolim. No, it's when you gave the truma and maaser while it was still in the kernels, while it was still attached to the ground. Right? That's the case we're talking about. V'not la'hemeno terumat ma'aser, right? And then the Truma Meiser was taken from it, but the Truma Gedola was not yet taken from it. Meaning you gave the Truma Meiser before the Truma Gedola, right? Doesn't Reish Lakish hold that if you gave Meiser before you give Truma, the rest of the produce is Pater from the Truma? Maaser mina maaser amarti lecha velo truma gedola v'truma mina maaser truma maaser mina maaser, right? That I only commanded you to give maaser from produce that had been already given truma from them, but I did not command you to give truma from produce that had already given maaser from them. So when you give them out of order, my svara would be to suggest that you would not be that food wasn't properly tithed. Amar le Rav Papa le Abaye ihachi afilu hikdima b'cheri nami lifter. But why then? Why then do we suggest that this has anything to do with Davka doing it while it's still in the grains, right? While it's still in the while it's still attached to the ground, right? Or while it's still in the shells and not yet separated, right? Why do we make that distinction? Oh, was it in the shells? Was it not in the shells? If a Levi is going to be pater from giving truma once the maaser was given before the truma was taken. Amarle, Alecha Amarkra, Mikol Matnotechem Tarimu. Because no, that we can answer by saying that there's a reboy to include that all the gifts the Levi need to give. The pasuk implies from the fact that it says all of your gifts, right? Meaning, what do you mean all of your gifts? The Levim know how much they're supposed to give, right? They're supposed to give a tenth of the maaser that they receive. What does it mean all of your gifts the Levim have to give? So that's implied by the pasuk that there is a time that the Levim have to give more than just the tenth of the maaser that they received for a Truma Gedola, right? So what is that time? Well, that's a time when the Truma Gedola hadn't yet been given, and so they have to give the Truma Maaser, and they have to give the Truma Gedola, right? So now, seemingly, we have two contradictory psukim, right? One pasuk implies to me, based on what Reish Lakish says, that you only have to give Truma if the truma, you only have to give Trumat Maiser if the Truma Gedola was given before the Levim were given their Maiser. And one implies to me that the Levim have to give the Trumat Maiser and the Truma Gedola if the Truma Gedola had not been given before the Levim received their Trumat Maiser. And so how do we reconcile between those two contradictory things as to whether or not Levim have to give the Trumat Maiser if the Truma Gedola was not given beforehand? We reconcile them by saying that one is when they're still in their shells, where they would not have to. One is when they're already piled up in piles and ready to be eaten or ready to be used. In that case, they would have to give them. And that's how we reconcile it between the two Pesukim. Umara ita. But how do you know to say that the case of when it's still in the shells, they don't have to give, and the case that it's not in the shells, they do have to give? How did you know to make that distinction? How did you know which one was which? Hi idgan, v'hai lo idgan, right? Because when it's still in the shells, it's not considered dagan, right? And when it's out of the shells, it is considered dagan, right? And so I understand that the pasuk that tells me that the Levim have to give the dagan must be referring to when it's already considered dagan, right? Which is once it's out of the shells. But when it's still in the shells and I don't consider it proper grain ready for being used, right? That's when the Levim would not have to give them. Let's just finish up this amud and then we'll stop. Maser sheni, when it comes to Maiser Sheni, Pshita, obviously you're allowed to move Maiser Sheni that has been that has been redeemed. What's the debate there? That's perfectly good produce that you can use if you've redeemed the Maiser Sheni. No, we're talking about like this. I left out one din when I was explaining the Mishnah, that basically you don't just redeem the exact amount of produce that you sold off wherever you lived and wherever you grew the produce. Rather, you have to add an additional fifth. You have to add, so if you sold $100 worth of, if you sold $100 worth of produce, and then you brought $100 to Yerushalayim, then you have to buy $120 worth of fruit in Yerushalayim. You add an additional fifth. Let's not get into if it's fifth milagav and fifth milabar, for those who are familiar with the machloket for now. And you have to add an additional fifth, right? So what did this come to teach you? You didn't add the additional fifth, right? You only redeemed exactly 100, still you'd be allowed to eat it, even though you didn't add the chomesh. You didn't add the additional fifth, but you redeemed the exact amount. Still you'd be allowed to eat it. Hakamash malan de'en chomesh me'akev. We can learn from there that additional fifth does not prevent you from benefiting from the fruit. Vaturmos ayavesh. When it comes to dried turmus, davki yavesh avalachlo, not wet turmus, my time akivan, de maril lo achle. Because wet turmus is very bitter, goats are not going to eat that. We're going to stop here.